The stereotypical alcoholic is seen as selfish, always focused on their own gain, getting their needs met, and using other people to make that happen. But it's actually far more common for people struggling with alcohol misuse to be people pleasers. They bend over backward, taking care of everyone, keeping everyone happy, to the point where they find themselves exhausted, empty, and full of resentment. People pleasing can be a huge pitfall in maintaining lasting sobriety. So we're here to talk about what it looks like, how it affects us, and how we've found the courage to say no more often.
Welcome to Through the Glass Recovery Podcast, where we believe that connection is the opposite of addiction, vulnerability is the antidote to shame, and that recovery isn't just rewarding, but it's also a lot of fun. We're your hosts, Steve and Julie. Listen as we get together with friends to shed light on the hard things, talk about the other side of addiction, and how we create a life so full, there's no space left for alcohol.
Just a quick reminder, if you haven't already subscribed to our weekly newsletter, head on over to our website, throughtheglassrecovery.com, and get yourself signed up. You'll get a weekly dose of sober inspiration, plus tips, tools, and access to our free weekly sober support group on Zoom.
All right, here we are. A little bit of behind the scenes for our listeners, so you guys kind of know what just happened. We're recording a podcast today about people pleasing. And for whatever reason, the people that we had scheduled for this episode haven't shown up. So we have invited three people to join us very last minute. And I love that we're talking about people pleasing and they're like, they've dropped everything in their lives to show up for us. I think it's just maybe a little bit ironic, but that said, we are here. We are recording a podcast. We are here with Daff, Robbie, and Leah. You guys are all amazing for jumping in last minute and helping us out and making this happen. So as we usually do, we're going to do introductions. I'm going to let Robbie start because Robbie has been here enough times to know how this goes.
They all had things to do today.
Yeah, and they're all
right.
Here.
And they're all here, people pleasing. It's amazing.
Number one people pleaser. My name is Robbie. I live in Rapid City, South Dakota. Today is 451 days for me of sobriety. See, I can't even talk. Sobriety. I'm a co-host of Golden Hour Adventures podcast. We feature people that have cool stories and like to do stuff outside. But I'm happy to be here. We're just getting ready to go for a run and Steve caught me at the right time.
three minutes out the door and I was, hey, we have a podcast episode on people pleasing. Do you want to join us? Sure, I'll be back in 3 minutes.
Super amazing. Cool. Thank you for being here and mm-hmm. It's really nice to see you again. Next, we're going to go with Daff.
Hey guys, I am Daff. I am a grateful alcoholic coming to you guys today from Florida. I just recently moved here. And next week, I will have 67 months continuous sobriety.
Awesome.
Thank you. And I am a recovery coach and a sober companion and a relapse prevention professional. And I am so grateful to be here with you guys today. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here and people pleasing like the rest of them.
Always.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here. And last but not least, we have Leah.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm Leah. I am new newer to the scene. I have been sober for 52 days. And I've recently moved to California from Colorado. And I'm a serial people pleaser. So when they reached out, I dropped everything and joined. Thanks for having me.
I love the look on your face.
Amazing.
I dropped everything.
I have a hard time calming the face.
It's all good.
Fantastic. So we know that experiencing difficult emotions is the leading cause of relapse. And it's important to explore our habits and behaviors so that we can make changes and therefore experience those difficult feelings less often. In many conversations with people who are in recovery, the topic of people pleasing comes up. And this can manifest in so many different ways, but the result is that almost always some kind of comfortable emotion comes bubbling up to the surface. So has people pleasing been a part of your recovery journey? What did it look like? And what changes have you made in your life and your behaviors so that you are able to maybe people please a little bit less often? Anybody is welcome to jump in and start, and then we will just have a conversation.
For me, people pleasing, that's why I started to use, I believe. Some childhood trauma left me feeling all alone. And the only way I felt I could fit in was to be doing what everybody else was doing, to be liked. So what everybody wanted me to do, I would do. I'd just people please. Then once I chose the journey of sobriety and moved into recovery, that was one of the first boundaries I put up, was to stop the people pleasing. It's not easy. I still have my days. But after, you know, a year of being in recovery, I find myself not people pleasing as much. I gave up all my friends when I first started sobriety, just because that's what led me to there and kept me there. So I made that decision also to get rid of all my friends, not all of them, but the ones that kept me in that constant cycle. And I would just continue to people please. If someone would call and say, let's go to the bar, I was the first one to say yes. You know, if someone else was like, come over and have a beer, I'd be over there to have a beer. Mm-hmm. Then, like I said, I made that boundary. And as time goes on, it gets easier and easier not to fall back in that little loop of people pleasing. My family and my deep friends, of course, I'm still people pleaser. But that's about where I'm at right now.
I resonate with what you say, Robbie. My people pleasing started in childhood as well, with just wanting to be seen in my family. And I would do anything to get attention, to be loved. And when my parents got divorced and I was graduating high school, entering college, I really, the people pleasing kicked in even harder when I put a lot of pressure on myself to be perfect and hold up this front that I didn't have the struggles of childhood. I didn't have the traumas and the things I was dealing with. My parents divorced. I kind of stuffed it all down. I suppressed it and pretended like things were perfect. And my feelings and emotions as a kid were very much dismissed. And so I was used to that. And I found substances to help that, to kind of numb that out, to take the pressure off, I guess. Because I was putting so much freaking pressure on myself to hold my shit together and not collapse. And substances was what helped me to take that pressure off, because I didn't know another way.
I think for me, I think growing up, like, I really wasn't that much of a people pleaser. Like, I wasn't drinking to please anybody. I was drinking for myself. My people pleasing, I never really fell into that when it came to drugs and alcohol, because I didn't need any help. I didn't need to please anybody but my own self. I didn't need anybody, like, any coaxing or anything like that. Like, I was the one that was doing that, I was like the pusher. But it came in other forms. Like, for me, I would say, not related to alcohol, but I would do things for you. And if you needed something, I would totally, I'm your girl, I'll do it. But then I'm going to drink at you because I'm pissed off because I just did this. Like, it's totally insanity, but I will go ahead and just break the silence on the F ball. I'm going to be the first one to drop it, because today in my life, no matter what it is, the whole people-pleasing thing, if it's not a hell yes, it's a fuck no. Like, that's it. If I have to think twice about it, I'm like, I already know the answer. And it took me so long to get there. I would say probably like 3 years. However, when it comes to, just like you guys, I rearranged the day. I made shit happen. Something that was super, super important, but I was able to still get it taken care of and be here for you guys. So when it comes to stuff in recovery, I will drop everything if I'm able. And, you know, I never want to be that person that I just want to be that light. Like, oh, wow. Like she did this. Like, why can't I do it? Like, this is what, you know, even if it's just getting off your ass and going to help your old neighbor, the little elderly man, you know, do I want to do it? Probably not, but it's the right thing to do. And I can do those things today because I'm sober. But back in the day of my drinking days, I never wanted to let anybody down. And I really can't say that I was that way. I don't really remember much of my life. Like the last decade of my drinking, I was a blackout drinker. I remember bits and pieces, but I just don't recall ever. I wanted people to like me, but I don't think I went as far out of my way. But then it got to where I think that if I was doing for you, it took attention off of me. And maybe, I don't know, maybe it wouldn't. Well, that girl, like, she wouldn't go do that if she's, you know, completely drunk. Well, yeah, I would, because that's what I did. Like, but you want something done? I'm like the first one to raise my hand, and I'm cussing the whole time and bitching about it and drinking about it. I did that a lot at work. I used to drink at work. I think I might have talked to y'all about that on the last podcast. And I would, I was an interior decorator. And we served alcohol to our clients because my thoughts were you kind of have to be intoxicated if you're going to walk into a store and drop $5,000-$7,000 on a sofa. And so I made sure I kept them very well lubricated as well as myself. And I would hire friends. Okay. And I can't really say that they wouldn't do their job, but I felt bad asking them to do what they're getting paid for. And I would do the shit. And then I get pissed off at them. And then I go get drunk at work, which makes so much sense. But anyway, I'm really not that person today. But yeah, my people pleasing, except for when it comes to you guys and in the recovery field, you know, I just try to, it boundaries. That's what it came down to, was finding my boundaries.
I think it's important to, you mentioned it too, deciding, what do I want to do? What is the right thing to do? And then why am I doing this? Whether it's for me or someone else. Like for me, a lot of it was like lack of making my own decision. Robbie, when you say like what other people wanted me to do, hey man, you're good at this. You should do this. And then I'm like, oh yeah, I'm good at this. I should do this. Like I completely not thinking for myself at all. Giving the power of that decision away completely to somebody else. And then this way I don't have to make it, right? If it fails, it's like, well, you know, I guess I'm not that good at it. You thought wrong. I don't get to own any of it. I get to give all of it away. It turned me into a doormat. I just said yes to everything. I said yes to everything in my marriage. Whatever she wanted, I just said yes because I thought that was what I was supposed to do. And that's ultimate people pleasing. And I wasn't, you know, the longer I drank, the worse I got as a husband and a father. But I still didn't say no, which I avoided conflict completely for the most part. By just saying yes, and it's not the right way to do that. And like you said, Daffy, you just drank at it. It was easier to drink at it than it was to face it, than it was to say no, than it was to even try and figure out how to understand what was going on and why I felt the way I felt. And instead of doing that, it was just easier to do what other people thought was better for me. Like they knew better because I had no self-confidence in making my own decision.
I think so. I did the same thing. I was everything everybody expected me to be, which I think is the ultimate in people-pleasing, right? But then because I am an overachiever, I took it a step further and then I just tried to
guess what they expected me to be. They didn't even have to tell me what they expected. I would just create these expectations and then try to live up to that. And that was my version of people pleasing, right? One example that comes to mind is my husband, when it came to the way we raised our children. He never necessarily outwardly communicated his expectations, so I guessed them. He was very much raised in an authoritarian setting, and that was kind of where he came from when he, you know, dealt with our children and dealt with the parenting and stuff. And so I assumed that's what he expected of me. And so my own belief systems about what parenting should look like, I threw out the window for like my kid's whole childhood. And I became the authoritarian mother that went against everything I believed and felt completely wrong. And I feel like it completely destroyed my relationship and my connection with my children. So looking back on all of that, I'm like, I feel so much guilt and so much regret over the way that I raised my kids, because I was just trying to be what I was expected to be, the mother that I was expected to be and the wife that I was expected to be. And he never came in and was like, damn it, this is how you have to do it, right? I just kind of adjusted myself to what I felt like he wanted. And we never had a conversation about it because, you know, communication. But that means that now I live with all this regret and all of this guilt and all of this sadness and also a shit ton of resentment. And I hold it against him, or I did. And I've worked through a lot of that now. But looking at that, I'm like, I was resenting him for my bad relationship with my children, which all of that, just all of those negative feelings just made me want to drink more. I was sitting there looking at my relationship with my kids who are now teenagers. One of them's, you know, moved out. And I'm like, there's just so much sadness there, and I would drink it all away. And the whole thing goes back to just people pleasing, trying to be what everybody else expected me to be. And that's really hard to accept that that's just what I did. I can't go back and change any of that now. But that also fuels my desire to be true to myself going forward, because I don't want to live with that kind of regret and that kind of resentment anymore. I'm not willing to live with that. So if that means standing up for myself and doing what feels right to me, I'm going to do that.
I think the whole, when it comes to people pleasing with your children, I think it was trying to be their friend. That was probably my problem, was wanting to be their friend and all of their friends' friend, and not holding them accountable. And obviously y'all know my story. You know, I look back, like I was sitting in a meeting yesterday. Oh, I can't even talk about it. I'll start to cry. And I was like looking over, you know, at my daughter, you know, she's an addict, alcoholic, and Julie, you can't carry that guilt. Here I am crying because I carry it. But it's like, we did the best we could with what we had. And those kids are going to turn out how they're supposed to turn out. It is their journey, because I have two children. I have a 27-year-old and a 30-year-old. One is covered in tattoos and piercings, the addict alcoholic, numerous arrests, DUIs, numerous treatment centers, detoxes. Then I have my 30-year-old, doesn't drink. If I had to guess what he's doing right now, he's probably reading his Bible or out doing service work for somebody. If he's not at the racetrack, because that's where he works and that's his passion, he races cars. But that, when he's not there, that is what he's just helping others. And not that my daughter wouldn't help others, but she's got to be sober to help others. You know what I'm saying? But they're polar opposites, raised under the same roof. And he would actually, that's what I was asking about Colorado. He lived in Lakewood for a while, for years. And, you know, of course, the way he was there and whatnot. And he would drink here and there. And when I went to treatment and he came and visited me, he's like, I could take it or leave it. And after seeing you here, I never want it. Like, I don't want it. And it's just funny that they're both raised under the same roof. I homeschooled them. This was before I got crazy, before I was crazy drunk. You know, I homeschooled them for years. And I tried to shelter them. I tried to shelter them as much as I could. But it just goes, they're going to do what they're going to do. And yeah, sure. So don't ever fault your, you know, just, it breaks my heart, because I look at her sitting in these rooms and I'm like, even yesterday, and I know exactly what I'm just telling you. I know this in my heart, but it's hard for me to believe it. You know, and I look over at her And I'm just like trying not to blink, you know, with tears in my eyes, like, oh my God, how did this happen? And then I'm like, you know what? Thank God she's sitting in this chair next to me.
Yeah.
And I'm not wondering where she is. Like I had the 3 weeks prior. Mm-hmm. So anyway, yeah, but sure. I was a very, very big people pleaser when it did come to my kids. And I got to say, I probably still am today. So maybe I'm not the best person to talk on that subject.
Maybe you are.
Yes. Of what not to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a big part of this. That's why we had these conversations, right? Is to learn from each other.
I don't have children, but I was an elementary music teacher for my career and always around kids and children. And within my job, the people pleasing was through the roof. Just, I was trying to please administration, the parents, the kids, keep it all balanced together. And I would come home to a drink that would just sort of take that edge off of all of the pressure that I put on myself, you know, unwillingly. Like it's just, it was not necessary, but I felt responsible for each kid, each child that walked into my classroom. And I was a music teacher. So I saw the entire school. And yeah, I so wish that in sobriety now, that's the first thing, like Robbie said, that's the first thing that sort of went, that I shed it, is like, I'm drawing boundaries and I'm doing this for me. This journey has just been for me for once in my life. I'm doing something for me, for no one else. I'm not pleasing other people with sobriety. This is for me. And, you know, like in hindsight, if I could go back into my career and do that, I probably wouldn't put as much pressure on myself. I just didn't know how to handle all of that. And the substances certainly weren't helping, you know?
When I got, after I graduated college and I got into my professional career, I was a huge people pleaser. I would do anything anyone asked. You know, I was the guy working 50, 60 hours a week. And it continued on and continued on. Then my daughter was born and I put work in front of my daughter. I don't know, still don't know why I did it. There's probably the external validation I would get. But, you know, in the end, I was really helping out the company and not myself. And for years and years, I did that until I finally had a boss one day tell me, you know, you're replaceable, right? And then I said, yeah. He says, quit working 50, 60 hours a week. You know, you need to only need to be here 40 hours. You have a daughter at home. They need you more than this company that's making money off you need you.
That's a damn good boss, Robbie.
Mm-hmm.
That guy was something else. I think about him every day still to this day. I was heavily using at this point in my life. Went through a divorce. Then, you know, this whole, after the divorce, the people pleasing got, I would say, worse with closer friends because I was missing that relationship I had with my ex-wife. So I transferred into friendship. Then I noticed it kept going on and on. And the career path I chose, a lot of, you know, after hour activities were around drinking. Friday would come and, you know, halfway through the day, what bar are we going to? We'd go close the bar down, you know, then we'd be so hungover. On Saturday, someone would put a message out, hey, let's go start drinking again. Then I started putting that in front of my daughter. I would go use instead of hanging out with my daughter. Then when my daughter got old enough to actually go to the bars, when I was living in Colorado at the time and they allow kids in the bar, I would just take my daughter because that people pleasing was still so ingrained in me that I thought, you know, I needed to go do this for other people. Fast forward to when I became sober, I told my daughter that, you know, I was going to stop all this and I had to put this in front of her, and she's only 13 and she understood. And I just want to say now how big of a difference it is in her life, our relationship. Now when I have to, because I was people pleasing with her too, whatever she wanted to do, I'd let her do. Now she knows the boundaries, and it's crazy to think now she looks at me as being the parent, the dad. When I tell her no, sometimes she'll ask why and I'll explain it to her. But it's like this big, huge flip-flop from where I was the yes dad for everything. And now I'm the rational dad that we have to have a discussion before something. And I grew up with my parents. You know, I was the kid outside as soon as the sun came up. Then my mom was yelling at me to come home when it got dark at night. There's really no boundaries. I could do whatever I want. And now that I instill these values with my daughter, she comes and asks me questions now about life. And, you know, one thing to look back on just this last year, it's how proud of myself I am for seeing the change in my daughter through me.
Yeah. I've seen the change in you. I've had myself and Julie have had been gifted with your presence at our meetings all the time. So we can see it. I can see it. And it's been awesome just to be a part of that and witness it. So I feel you there. And the part I relate to the most when it comes to work, I was really good. I was really good at work. And so I was approached by the bosses and they were like, hey, yeah, I think you'd make a great supervisor. And when someone told me that they thought I was good at something, I would be like, wow, yeah, I think I would be, that would be cool. And then I'd go home and tell my wife and my wife saw promotion. That's great. It's good for you. Blah, 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 blah. And I just went ahead and did it, even though like there's the gut feeling inside of me, you know, you have to take a leap of faith sometimes to figure out whether you're going to like it or not. So I jumped into management. And then when I jumped into management, I lost all of my friends. And I knew that was going to happen. My drinking alone increased when that happened. And then I was a really good supervisor and I was really good at the job in the refinery. And they were like, I think you would be a great refinery lead. At the time, I was kind of their only option or one of the few options, but I think you would be a great refinery lead. We're going to offer me another promotion. I'm not going to work shift work anymore. I'm not going to do all of that stuff. I go home, right? And I let my wife know this is what they're thinking. And she's like, yes, absolutely. No more shift work. It's going to be great. And, you know, I'm going to be home for dinner all the time and all of those things. And I forgot to check in with myself. It was what everyone else thought was good for me. And you know what? I'm not saying it was all bad. I forgot to check in with myself. And I forgot to really ask myself, what was important here to me? I might still be working there right now if I had stayed as an operator instead of moving up the chain in management. Now I can be grateful for all of those experiences, and I am. But those decisions were really based on what everyone else thought I was going to be good at. And I didn't really give myself that time to look internally and see what I thought was good for me at the time.
I love when you say, I forgot to check in with myself. And I think that's something that most of us, it's not even that we forgot, it's that we didn't even know we were supposed to, right?
No, go figure, like, yeah.
Nobody ever told me that that was an option. And so I never knew I could put my needs or my wants or my values before other people's. My first experience with that was when I first quit drinking. And, you know, they say you have to get a little bit selfish. For me, that was torturous to get selfish, to put myself first. I dropped everything that wasn't absolutely necessary. I took everything off of my plate that I possibly could. I was on all these committees. I was volunteering in a youth organization. I was doing all of these different things because I was the yes girl, right? When you live in a small town and you say yes to one thing, they're like, oh, we found her. And they just put everything else on your plate too. And you're like, yeah, I can do everything. And I had to step back from all of that. I knew I had to. There was no way I was going to get sober and still meet every single other need out there. And that was torturous because I was so used to putting everybody else before myself. And to put yourself first is so necessary and so important, but it also feels so selfish because, you know, so many of us were raised that way. But yeah, I like the way that you said that, forgot to check in with myself, or in some cases, give yourself permission to check in with yourself. I think that's so important.
I think you put that a really good way too, because I was drinking a fair amount too, but the lack of really self-awareness and the self-trust, like there was a lot of self-doubt in creating conflict and being able to survive it at the end. So it was a lot easier to keep everyone else comfortable and then not keep myself comfortable. And I don't even know that I understood that that's what I was doing at the time. It's not like I had the thought process of, okay, I keep them comfortable, then everything's going to be all right. I think it just did it because I was avoiding the feeling of being uncomfortable, and I didn't even know how to put words to that. There was no words for it. It just sucked. And to avoid suck here, to avoid the suck and creating uncomfortable in the relationship, it was easier to just give up on myself. That's what people pleasing. It was giving up on myself to keep everyone else comfortable. And that's okay. I did the opposite too, to keep one person comfortable. I pissed a lot of other people off.
And then you're like juggling the people pleasing, right? Who do I please? Who's the most important? To hell with me.
Who's trying to please us? Like, who's trying right? to please us? Does anybody get mad?
Yeah.
And that's where you get resentful, right? Do people worry about making us happy as much as we worry about making them happy? No. Like, I don't know anybody that does. No one gives a shit if I'm happy. I mean, my kids and my husband, but you know what I mean? Like, strangers, people everywhere you go, and friends, like, nobody's going out of their way. At least I haven't seen it. And I don't expect anybody to, mm-hmm. even though I would do it. But I never expected that from people. But you do it once and that's it. Like, that's, they expect it, you know, and they use you. And I think I saw a lot of that at the end of my addiction. For me, knowing the life that I lived for so long, I just think that when I started getting sober, that's why it was hard for me not to be a people pleaser, because, I mean, even more so, because I know that I had just let so many people down for so long. And mm-hmm. I felt like, now it's your time to redeem yourself. You know, now you've got to make up for all this crap that you've done. And so I think that that's where a lot of mine, once I got sober, came in. And then not knowing how to live, you know, I hadn't been sober and oh my God, I don't know how long. And for me, it was just, I didn't want to go back to where I was the day that I tried to kill myself. Like, I didn't want to go back there, and I was going to do whatever I had to do not to go back to that place. And I got a sponsor as soon as I got out of treatment. Let me rephrase it. She got a new sponsee. I wasn't looking. She like,
I wasn't like, looking.
I was not. She like sunk her talons in me. And like, I wanted somebody that had something that I wanted. Well, apparently she wanted what I had, because it didn't quite go the other way around. And I hate to say that, but we were not a good match. But she loved to volunteer for service work. Like, if there was a need, if it came up, she's raising both hands. And I'm like, oh, hell, here we go. Because I knew what that meant. It meant Daphne is about to do – Daphne's about to go clean a barn. Or Daphne's about to go cut somebody's grass. And that – I think was the beginning of me finally getting a backbone, mm-hmm. because it didn't matter what need arose. I'd get phone calls if I wasn't even at the meeting. Oh, so-and-so said that you would love to do this. I'm like, well, fuck. Okay, sure. Of course I would. And I did that for probably, I would say it took me about 3 years of being sober before finally, it was just wearing me down. Over time, I started seeing, like, okay, I am giving so much and I'm not getting anything in return.
Yeah.
Not that I wasn't getting anything out of those meetings, but I was taking so much away. That probably went in the right way to say that. But you know what I'm saying? Like, I was giving way more and taking so much away from my family. And I couldn't say no to these people. Same with sponsees. I was working to keep them sober more than they were working to keep them sober. And I'm a huge empath. And it was so difficult. So you got people pleaser and an empath in one. Like, that's horrible. And
it's like a recipe for disaster.
And I just about lost my mind. Like, seriously was done.
I think you said it right. I was giving too much for not getting enough in return. And I think you're allowed to say that.
It's hard.
You're right. It is hard. But the cup only has so much water in it. So you need something in return. And it's okay that if you give too much to one thing, if it empties that cup, you need something in return. And it's okay to admit that even though you were doing great service work, that it wasn't giving back to you enough to continue.
No. Oh, and then that wasn't enough. I had to go back to, you know, take all these classes because let me be a recovery coach. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm like, what else can I do? Oh, sober companion, I'll do that. Sober transport, tack that one on there. Oh, relapse prevention, I'll take that one too. You know, it's like, Jesus, what are you trying, like,
we are
trying to like be the president of AA or something, like president of the recovery of America. I don't know what the hell I thought I was trying to accomplish, but I got to the point where I just like that had a mental breakdown. And I read somewhere about empaths, and it was saying in a book, and it said for every hour that you give of your time, people like us, all of us need 2 hours taken back, two hours for ourselves. And that to me, I'm like, I don't have that many hours in the day because I got to do this, 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 and that. But I'll tell you, once I've just like totally lost it, the meetings were done. I was like, I can't. Like, no, I didn't have much help at the end because the world opened back up. Right. But there was still like one person that wanted a meeting. I'm like, okay, let me haul ass home from doing what I'm doing because that person's going to be waiting on me. But I like just totally had a meltdown. I think I left Instagram for like 2 months. The meeting stopped. I totally redid what I was doing with my sponsees, and I got a backbone, and I learned my boundaries, and you know, and now when I take on a new sponsee, like I can't want it more than you, or with its clients or a sponsee. I even told it to my child 2 days ago that, and I started out this way that I would rather step because everyone thinks I'm so sweet because I'm a people pleaser. Of course I'm sweet, but so it's like, I'm just coming off that way these days because I'm not anymore.
Sass. Listen to the sass.
Right.
Right. You hear the sass.
And so but I'm like, I would rather step on your feelings than step on your grave. And that's how I was starting this out. And so I can't, you know, that's just the way I have to be. Otherwise, I will kill myself trying to please everybody else. And like my life today, it's a little chaotic with no fault of my own. But, you know, I have strict boundaries, and my boundaries are to protect me. They're not to offend anybody. And if you're offended by them, well, you need to look within you because I'm trying to stay sober and I'm trying to see another day. And my family time is everything to me.
Mm-hmm. Those boundaries are exactly what I think we're all figuring out that we need here is no matter where we're at, what we're doing, where we want to help people, you know, we can lose ourselves in so many different ways. But at the end of the day, it's all about the boundaries. That's where we end up.
So deep into the people pleasing, I'm listening to Daff, and what I'm hearing is there's no balance. There's no balance at all, right? And everything I'm hearing Daff say is she ran out of balance, she got exhausted, she gave too much, and now she's figured out a way, even in the chaos still, she's figuring out a way to create the balance with the clients and life and the kids and everything else. And that's hard to do because things change. Time is required somewhere else, and I can't do the things that I used to do. And that's where the boundaries come in. That's where learning how to say no and learning that no is a complete sentence
yep.
is really important. I'm going to wrap this up. When we talked about all of this people pleasing, one of, or a lot of the big things we talked about is never wanting to let anyone down. It's really hard to say no, like I just mentioned. Wanted people to like me. It's the whole trying to fit in and being accepted and getting affirmations for doing the things that other people wanted you to do. Trying to be what someone else thinks they want me to be. So people-pleasing form of self-abandonment. And one of the things that I wrote down here was the opposite of people-pleasing is making it personal.
Mm. Ooh. Yeah.
When I listen to all of you talk, when I people-please, it's about everyone else. When I start making it personal, I get to check in with myself. I get to ask myself those important questions and see what parts of me I'm willing to give up and what parts of me I still need to keep. So I want to say thank you, Daff. Oh, Leah, did you want
to
say something?
I just wanted to say that my first round of trying to get sober failed because of my people pleasing. Mm. It wasn't until I did it for myself and didn't give a shit what everybody else thought about me that it's working.
Absolutely.
And you're making your recovery the most important piece. And when I did that, it was uncomfortable. It was also beautiful and wonderful. As long as I kept that and made that important, everything else figured itself out and fell into place and the rest of that. I want to say thank you, Daff. Thank you, Robbie. And thank you, Leah, for helping this episode come together in literally like 4 hours. Yeah. And you, Robbie and Leah, helping this episode come together in 15
like
minutes.
Minutes. Yeah. You guys are the best. Thank you so much.
You guys are awesome. I appreciate you guys so much. Thank you so much for your time and your thoughts and your experiences. You're beautiful people. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Through the Glass Recovery Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, be sure to rate or review us on whatever podcast platform you're using. We'll see you next week when we'll be talking about building self-esteem.